In this podcast, we will be talking with Abby Turner, the owner of Lucky Penny Farms, Garrettsville, Ohio.
Thank you, Annie, for having me here today, and I'm delighted to be at Blue Rock Station. I'm Abby Turner, and I am with Lucky Penny Farm, and I am a cheesemaker, and have had the wonderful experience of living with goats now since 2006, and using their milk to make artisan cheeses.
That's great. And do you make other products as well?
Yes, we make a goat milk soap, as well as a goat milk caramel sauce, cajeta, which is a traditional sauce, much like a dulce de leche, but made with goat milk. It's beautiful, unctuous, it's rich, smoky, sweet, really something just really special.
I can't wait to try it. Sounds delicious. So tell me a little bit about how you really got to where you are right now. You didn't just start out, you said 2006. So how did you get to where you are now, owning different parts of like a farm and business and that?
The small farm dream was part of my world much earlier than it actually became a reality. My background is in professional fundraising and economic development, and in my office I had a picture of a beautiful old historic farm in a lovely, lovely pasture, and that was my focal point. You know, I kept it in the place that I would see it multiple times per day, and I said, this is why I am working, to eventually have that barn. And in 2002, we found a lovely historic property in very, very bad shape. But in Garrettsville, Ohio, and purchased a 1870 farmstead with 5 outbuildings and a lot of work to do.
And then what happened? What led you to goats?
So at the time, we had started a young family, and I had a 2-year-old and a 3-year-old. And not having experience with livestock agriculture in my upbringing, I didn't want to start with cows, but I love cheese. So opened the paper, the Farm and Dairy, and looked for either goats or sheep, you know, and there was goats available. So I picked up the phone, called a farm, got 4 goats, and then proceeded afterwards to call my husband and say, hi, honey, I bought 4 goats today. And that was the beginning of a wonderful thing. Obviously, when you have goats, you know, you can't have just one. They're like potato chips, right? But they provide you with this wonderful rich milk, which is obviously great for drinking, but also for making really lovely cheeses that highlight Ohio's wonderful soils.
Okay, well, and then what brought you to decide to make a sauce? I mean, that's unique, really.
So being trained professionally to really look at the numbers of things. The dairying business is an interesting business because it is 24/7, it is 365 days a year, and there is sometimes a seasonal flow, oftentimes a seasonal flow that is more than you can produce or more than you have sold in terms of the cheese production. So the goat milk caramel sauce became a way to take an excess amount of goat milk and turn it instead cheese, which would give you, you know, 2 or 3 week fresh shelf life. It would allow us to take that same milk and take it into something that was shelf stable and give us a year. So cajeta was originally included into our business plan as a way to balance that seasonal flow and increase decrease of milk, as well as balance orders and demand from the marketplace with what we were producing, which, you know, is really tough. You can't tell the goat, oh, excuse me, I want to go on vacation. Can you just turn off for 7 days while I, you know, exit the farm? Those things don't happen. So the cajeta became a way for us to balance our milk flow.
And then tell me a little bit about what is your business model. You've got different products that you're making and operating seasonally, as you're talking. But But tell me more about your business model.
You know, we've tried many different business models. Our original business plan, which we're in version, I think, 15 now, over our 9 years of business, our original plan was to actually milk at the farm and produce cheese at the farm. So that would have been a farmstead cheese. And the economics of that just didn't work out. That was, we were prepared to launch around 2009, right around the time of the economic collapse. And we couldn't get any traditional financing. We went to the bank and they said, well, why would I want to pay $24 a pound for cheese or whatever number when I can just go to the store and buy it for $3.29? And then, you know, you'd look out at the parking lot at the car that this person was driving, and it was a very expensive vehicle. I'd say, well, I can get to the same place that you can at the same time. I drive a $2,000 car, you drive a $25,000 car. So obviously you're placing a value on an experience. And people that like goat cheese or other artisan cheeses place a value on the products that they're tasting. That value could be in the flavor, that value could be in the nutrition, that value could be in the local production, that value could be in the way that the animals were raised, whether or not everything's mm-hmm. grass-grazed. We know that all of these things put together, and the value also could be in organics, all of these things put together can command a higher price at the marketplace. And when we are trying to run small businesses, taking an agricultural commodity and turning it into a value-added product, we need to make sure that we have every one of those attributes into that cheese so we can command a higher price in the marketplace. Why is this important? Well, we want to pay our farmers fairly. We want to raise our animals well and in a healthy manner. And we want to run sound businesses. Businesses that not only are sustainable in the true sense of the word, meaning, you know, that they care for the earth and the water and the soil and the animals that we work with and the agricultural workers, but sustainable in that we continue to exist. So we have to look at the numbers as well as the means of production. So we've had many different business models over the years. We tried getting into sheep milk for a little bit, and that proved to be very difficult. But the products were the best cheeses we've ever made.
What did you think was difficult about that?
We import a lot of sheep cheese from other countries. And those cheeses...
Well, that's a global market.
Well, that's right. Those cheeses, although beautiful, and I enjoy them regularly, are brought in and sold at a price significantly lower than our cost to produce or market a sheep cheese in Ohio. There's many people that are doing wonderful work with it. Some with taking the approach of aging, which adds a value to that cheese and can command a higher price at the marketplace. But we started working with some of the fresh cheeses and didn't really get the market support that we needed to in our timeline. I'm sure that if we would have stuck with it a little longer, or maybe even if we go back to it, it might be something that we could prove to be economically feasible. You know, there was an article in the New York Times last fall which highlighted many award winners from the American Cheese Society conference. And the article then went on to say that of some of these sheep cheese award-winning cheeses, two of them have gone out of business in the months since. It is a very difficult business. The seasonality, sheep are even more seasonal, a shorter lactation mm-hmm. cycle than goats. There are many, many shepherds feel that they're harder to work with than the goats because of their temperament. Unfortunately, we've started to see much of the same pattern with small goat dairies and goat creameries across the country where it's just really challenging to make it. Cow, you have a little bit more of a benefit in terms of a small creamery because you have a lower cost on the milk and you have a 365-day flow, mm-hmm. Lactation cycle. Sheep, it's 105, I think, and goats, obviously, is longer. But when you're trying to build business with the chefs, it's, you know, they don't want things to be out seasonally. Unfortunately, we live in a world that we expect everything all the time. You know, avocados in January in Ohio, right?
Right. That's right.
And the way that I've chosen to farm, and I believe the way that you choose to farm, is with respect for the seasonal nature of small ruminants and their lactation cycles.
Yep. So what do you think are some trends in terms of not just goat cheese, but just in the keeping of ruminants? And I'll give an example is when you look at women today in homesteading farms or farmsteads, whatever different people call it different names. So producing dairy specialty products. When you look at that and you see that women are really farming differently, they're farming without debt, they're farming on smaller pieces of ground, they're forming networks. I mean, these are all trends that are very clearly out there. I mean, there's been a lot of reporting on it at different times. And I just wonder, like, if you see other trends or how you see those things influencing the dairy, specialty dairy market.
So I think that it's wonderful to see more women getting into agriculture. And I'm thrilled. And we do our best to work with interns and young women to help them live out their small farming dream. One of the challenges is that when you're looking at dairy, obviously you can't make dairy at home. Or you can't make dairy at home, but it can't be a product that is commercially regulated out in the marketplace, let's say. So there is a very large barrier to entry to build a creamery. You know, you're looking at six figures. And this often is an obstacle for someone wanting to start a small food and farm-based business. Maybe produce might be easier. You know, maybe selling eggs, raising poultry up to, 1,000 birds a year. Dairy has a high ticket to get in. It's a high entry cost. Other trends that I see, I believe that as women, as caretakers of you know, our farm, our animals, of our families, there to me seems to be a greater concern or care or attention to the methods of production. Whether that be, farming from animals, raised solely on grass, or a method of production that might be culturally or traditionally appropriate, that is not in our traditional American marketplace. I think it's wonderful that as women are entering farming, we are protecting different methods of production. And allowing people to farm in the way that they want to farm, whether that's organically, whether that's biodynamic, whether that's using only heirloom seeds, brought over from a seed swap. Mm-hmm. You know, we need to celebrate each other's desires to produce foods in these ways and support them through our purchases. Often I get asked the question about, local food's so expensive, or, these foods are so much more. Well, I place a value on a method of production and the care that is put into the products that are brought to the farmer's market, or that I can get when I come here to your farm. There's love in those products. There's handwork and there's heartwork. And I believe that we as women farmers do both.
So, and I totally agree with everything you're saying. It's great the way you're saying it. So, what do you think is the best advice you've ever been given? I know I'm putting you on the spot, but...
So, I'm laughing because when I started writing the first business plan back in 2006... I went to go talk to another goat cheese producer, woman, goat cheese producer, who was getting out of the business. And I said, Ann Hauser, she makes beautiful cheese. I said, Ann, I said, I need your advice. I asked her that exact question. And her answer to me was, run like hell.
That's what we all should have done.
Maybe. That being said, I really feel that if you have a calling to do something, then you should do something every day to make sure that you get closer to that goal. You know, when I was working full-time and raising small children, I would wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning because I was excited about a business idea or about thinking about a logo or a marketing plan or working with a particular chef. And every day I tried to make sure that I was doing something to get closer to my goal of having my own goat-based business, you know, a goat dairy and creamery. Things turned out much differently than I thought that they were going to. You know, as I said, we've gone through multiple business models. We're on a new business model now, just trying to make things work so we can still produce a lovely product at an affordable price and that it can be fresh, never frozen, no preservatives, and made in a traditional way that celebrates our beautiful milk from Ohio goats. I think other bits of advice, build a really good team and pick people that are smarter than you to work with, whether that be an accountant, a lawyer, whether that be someone that understands supply chain logistics. Build your team of people that are dedicated to food and understand food and that really want to help you on your mission. You know, build your tribe. And I can't say enough about the importance of writing that business plan. Interestingly, no one's really asked for it. As I said, we have 15 versions of it. But the value in doing it was it forced you to answer all of the questions mm-hmm. that someone will answer. They've never asked all of them at the same time. Thank God it's a 75-page, you know, paper. But, you know, when you go in to talk to a bank or if you're doing some crowdfunding, or if you're going to go talk to the insurance person or someone from USDA or ODA or whomever, you know, whatever alphabet soup, you know, SBC, SBDC, SBA, that business plan will help you answer all of those questions about, you know, what is the break-even analysis? I was looking at my numbers yesterday, you know, what is the break-even analysis? What's it going to really cost per month for me to make this business work? I'm still trying to find the answers 8 years later.
Well, one of the challenges is that for most of us, we are required, first of all, we're mostly work by ourselves, even if we do have the support of other professionals like attorneys and accountants. But secondly, we're in a position where we can't possibly be great at all the skill sets that are required to run a business that that makes a living. And so I think that's some of the challenge is, you know, where are our strengths and where are our weaknesses, and really trying to be honest with ourselves about what that means.
Yeah, we quickly have to face ourselves in the mirror and face what our shortcomings are and what we aren't capable of. And that's not easy. You know, when you start this, you think, oh, I'm going to do this and it's going to be great and everything's going to be wonderful and, you know, it's going to be butterflies and unicorns. And then you quickly find out that, you know, like in our case, we couldn't get bank financing. Our milking parlor got hit by lightning and, you know, we just couldn't put together the vision that we originally had. Did that stop us? Absolutely not. So I don't think setbacks should stop anyone. I think that it just gives us another opportunity to find a new way to do it.
Yep, I totally agree. Did you have any other words of wisdom or advice that you wanted to give before we wrap up?
Oh, I just do it. You know, grab a friend, talk to as many people as you can, reach out. Everybody's pretty good about spending time with the young folks that are interested in starting. Do it. you know, how do you eat an elephant? It's one bite at a time. And it's been a wonderful, wonderful experience. You know, the people I've met, the goats I've met, you know, we've been really, really blessed. So I've been lucky to work in a really great food community in Columbus and Cleveland, and work with, you know, great other communities as well. We work with three Amish farms right now, and so it's an English Amish partnership. And you know, then we're taking it up to, you know, our wonderful, you know, nationally recognized chefs up in Cleveland. And you know, I consider what we're doing as being a bridge between rural and urban, and providing consumers with choices about the food that they consume. I hope that we as a culture can start thinking a little more about what we put into our bodies and the food that we eat. You know, if you consider our food industry, you know, food is in all industries, whether it be transportation, healthcare. You know, when we look at our food system, there isn't any single issue. But as consumers, we should be taking more time to reflect upon our wonderful producers, our small farmers, and the methods of production that they farm by. We need to support that.
Okay, well, thank you. Thanks to Abby Turner for sharing her ideas and expertise. Technical assistance and photography is provided by Kat Harrier and Devin Kennedy. This program is a part of a collaboration between Rural Action and NCSARE Research and Education. In future podcasts, we'll be interviewing a variety of people who are connected to the specialty dairy product industry, plus talk about how to make a living by supplementing a dairy business with other products produced by the animal. Marketing, branding, animal welfare, standards and regulations, and more will be covered in upcoming podcasts. For more information, visit www.ruralaction.org. Copyright 2018 by Rural Action and Blue Rock Station, LLC.